Welcome to another MPU After Dark podcast, where you get to hear what we talk about after the show. Enjoy.
That was all right. It got a little off track there for a little while.
Off track. I got a little heated, and I apologize again. Molly, I think you could... I think you're fine. I think you've heard worse.
Yeah. So just so I know, where is it that we think we got off track so I can make sure not to exacerbate the problem?
When I open my mouth. That's usually never a good sign.
I think it was when Kevin started yelling at about 108 decibels.
Okay.
So you guys really can't find anybody that like is all in for Trump?
Cliff actually backs Trump during the primaries.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he backed Trump much earlier than most people. So he just couldn't be on tonight.
We thought Cliff was joking, too.
I think his choices were Bobby Jindal and then Trump.
Wow.
No, that's a joke.
Yeah.
I don't remember an episode where he explained that. I'd be curious to hear why.
He believed that his policies. He was a policy guy. And we would say, okay, the video – the hate, the walls, the blah. He goes, I believe that his policies, but I think he knew that he was going to win. And
but
Cliff
his policies,
likes,
I mean, the joint session address shows.
Yeah.
He's not a conservative, though. You know, I mean, we knew this before, but I think the joint session address made it very clear. So what, I don't know.
Right. He was a populist. He's not a. It has nothing to do with him being a conservative. I mean, he'll do. He's a populist. I mean,
The impression I've had, and I've known Cliff for it's almost 10 years now. Cliff is more skeptical of free trade than most Republicans were. I'm not sure about anymore. I think that extends into he's much more comfortable with immigration enforcement, with immigration law enforcement. I think those are a couple things that helped. I think he has, if memory serves, he had some close friends who came into the Trump campaign very, very, very early, even before he did, and they sort of talked him into it and such. I think Cliff is somebody who, trying to figure this out. I've always found that there are two levels of political correctness that most people complain about. The first is just, you know, reorienting manners towards the 21st century. The other one is something like Rotherham, England, where the city council and the city police force refused to investigate a Pakistani-led child sex victimization ring that victimized hundreds of native-born girls between 11 and 14 because they didn't want to be seen as racist again and only prosecuting Pakistani men.
I believe that was actually called Schwarmagate. Wasn't that trite?
No, I don't remember that particular term.
That was a joke.
I've been following that in the British press, and that's not funny.
it is to me.
Cliff being one of the very few people, very few Americans who focus on Britain so much, probably hears political correctness in his head and he thinks Rotherham instead of what's actually going on over here. And I think that may have also pushed him more towards Trump. Personally, I know that Rotherham is five time zones away. That may have had more of an effect on him. I don't know.
So I spoke to my father about the Sessions thing, and he thinks it's a smokescreen.
Is it Democratic?
You see where this is going, right? He thinks that all the Russian talk, like all the Russians, and he can't understand why haven't we confirmed Trump's cabinet. And I said, well, we really can't because Trump. I mean, we can't stop it. I mean, it's not really up to us. He's got the Senate, so we're not stopping him.
Most of them have gone through by now. I mean,
right, that's what I told him.
That was one thing we didn't talk about is all the cabinet nominees that got confirmed this week. Yeah. Interior, HUD.
HUD.
There's one other one I can't remember.
Was OBM this week or last week?
That was this week. Yeah, so Ben Carson got got in this week.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
No one said a word because it was the same day as the Sessions thing. But he's fascinated by the fact that he thinks that all this resist and all that. He goes, why doesn't the Democrats just go along with this and we could actually get laws passed and we could actually get things done? And I keep telling him, Democrats have no power right now. We don't control the Senate. We don't control the House. We don't control the executive. We're just kind of pissing and moaning right now.
Well, yes. If we're talking about dads, my dad, he's much older, and I don't know how much of this I can share or how much of it is real, but I think he was involved in Bay of Pigs to some extent. So,
wait, Rafael Castro was your dad?
Right. Exactly. I know. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. You can see the resemblance. And so for my entire childhood and adult life, he's been calling everything a Soviet-Cuban conspiracy, everything. And the wonderful thing about the 2016 election and now Trump's presidency is he's finally right again. You know, it's no longer like an older man babbling in the corner. He's back on track. So
I must be really strange. My mom departed this life about 11 years ago.
I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. Dad left in 14, but he voted for Obama twice. And we had our disagreements and we were generally okay with it. But my dad voted for Obama twice. I don't know what he would have thought of Trump, because dad always thought political parties were somehow evil. So Trump's
weird.
Right,
I was about to say that's not mutually exclusive. I know people who voted for Obama twice.
I know that.
Yeah.
There are people in Wisconsin and a lot of these counties that flipped in the Rust Belt that voted for Trump.
There's a lot of people.
But the thing is, I wouldn't say they flipped for Trump as much as they converted to the GOP. Because if you look at the numbers, Trump actually ran behind Senate candidates. He ran behind House candidates. They didn't just go for Trump. They went whole kit caboodle.
Yeah,
they went down to the little ones. I mean, they're as far as Democrats are concerned, those voters are gone. They're not coming back. They're converts. They're like 200% Southern. Who hasn't heard, who knows what 200% Southern is? Because that's just me.
I don't know. I was at the North Texas Irish Festival. They had a stand that was like Sons of the Confederacy, Sons of the Confederacy. So maybe it's something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just basically it's Yankees who come down to the South and who essentially try to out-Southernize everybody else because they're new. It's the zealotry of a convert.
Yeah.
That's what we're dealing. That's what I think.
Wow.
That's what Democrats are dealing with these new Trump voters, and not just Trump voters. They voted Republican all the way down. They've got the zealotry. They've got the zealotry of a convert. They're not coming back. All right, they're gone.
I also think it's the economy stupid issue, right? For whatever reason, Trump voters just don't believe that Democrats have their backs on the economy and on jobs, and
for whatever reason
they're willing to give the apprentice a try.
Right. And there's the fact that the recovery is uneven. We haven't really talked about that a whole lot, but there are a whole bunch of things for it. But in terms of what I think Democrats need to do for 2020, it's the more standard traditional Republican voters in, say, the Sun Belt. Frankly, Hillary, it's voters like you. Voters like you are the ones that Democrats need to attach on to their coalition.
So this is something. This is something I think would be interesting to talk about at some point, because I'm experiencing this crisis of conscience, as are some people I know, who are demographically similar in terms of profession and evangelical background. The question of do you regret if it came down to you, right? And I think, Kevin, you might have raised this at some point. If it came down to you and you were deciding the election, it was Trump or Hillary, would your pro-life beliefs be such that you still wouldn't vote for Hillary, knowing what you know now? And what other facts or counterfactuals would have to happen for you to switch over, right? So let's say there is some like nuclear holocaust with North Korea and it happens because Trump was just not equipped. What would I do? So in terms of getting Sunbelt voters like me, I don't know how it's possible, because the Democratic Party has moved so far to the left on some of these issues, and you've got people insisting that, you know, a life isn't a life until it's almost out of the womb. I think there's just some points where you're not going to have much overlap. I don't know, barring catastrophe.
But I think the issue is what. I mean, to some perspective, it's also a matter of what Democrats can do. I mean, yes, there are certain issues where, say, Democrats in the pro-life community may never actually see eye to eye. There are going to be some issues where Democrats and economic conservatives can never see eye to eye. But the question is, are Democrats willing to look at, say, more pro-market policies, where economic conservatives look and go, okay, I don't agree with them on everything, but clearly they're moving on here, 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 and here. You know, if for example, Helena, Democrats were more open on education reform, maybe kind of like a Michelle Rhee or an Ava Moskowitz. Right. Yeah. Would that be something to go, okay, we have our disagreements on preborn life, and I'm actually with you on that, Helena, but they are better now on school choice than they were before, and Donald Trump is still a nut bar.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder to what extent some of this is limited by the fundamental way a person views the role of the federal government, right? So if we could have a more, I hate to say Hillary-esque candidate, but a more centrist candidate on that question, someone who says, look, the federal government has some role, right? We want regulations. We don't want the market to operate completely unchecked and unfettered, but the role of the federal government should not be as broad as Democrats have had it be in the past. If you had a candidate who could do things like that, that could address some of the abortion problems, some of the economic problems that do cause a divide and could increase a coalition.
Right, but Donald Trump is making federal powers even
he's
more.
He's doing the opposite. Exactly.
Well,
he's doing
the exact opposite.
That's the thing. But see, what Democrats have not seen yet is the fact that Donald Trump's big government privilegism, for lack of a better term, actually no, I like that term. Donald Trump's big government privilegism is actually creating a situation where limited government conservatives, freer market conservatives, looking going, oh crap, I don't have a home anywhere.
Yep.
And it actually it is prying loose voters that the Democrats can win over because Donald Trump is ignoring them.
And you're going to have this in
but
Texas.
But not if they're going for Liz Warren.
You're going to
Well, no, Elizabeth Warren does not do that.
No, Elizabeth Warren's, you know, even the liberal Democrat like me, I can't see Elizabeth Warren as a candidate. A serious candidate. I can't see it.
Why not, Craig?
I mean,
why not?
Because she is so far to the left. And I love her.
On what issues are
we
talking about?
On every issue.
No, on what issue?
Regulation.
Regulation of what?
Regulation
of what? The banking industry.
She has a better regulation. She does the banking industry for sure.
You actually think that her positions on the banking industry are unpopular?
With lawyers in Wall Street, yes.
Well, with lawyers in Wall Street, but how about you know the voters?
They're also wrong
that we're talking about
50% with 50% of the country. Yes.
I'm not arguing with you. I just want to be clear. Hold on.
I disagree.
Hold on. I just want to be clear. You think that 50% or more of the country would have a problem with breaking up the big banks, with dealing with too big to fail, and with assigning criminal.
Fail, I would support her.
I'd be,
but she's not doing that.
Regulations.
She's not doing that.
What regulation?
Are you saying that Dodd-Frank
was not a good law for because it overregulated the banking industry?
Dodd-Frank has made them bigger. Dodd-Frank's solution to too big to fail is nobody is too big to fail. So you can be as big as you want, and we're not going to let anybody fail.
The one piece of Dodd-Frank that was worth it, I think, is the living will, right? Which requires these banks to set forth, here's what would happen in the event that the Titanic goes under. Here's our lifeboat plan.
And thanks to regulatory capture, they don't have to do that. They have all been late on those. And basically the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department have been, oh, yeah, by the way, you're late on those. I mean, it's ridiculous.
You don't think that the Consumer Protection Agency was a good part of Dodd-Frank?
Consumer Protection Agency is my new favorite. They're so overpaid. I don't know why I'm in academia. I got to get for the Consumer Protection Agency. The number of six-figure bureaucrats that they have in the Consumer Protection Agency. And these are all the things that will just totally come to light if she runs.
Yeah. Essentially, it is a board that is completely accountable to no one because it's funded by the Federal Reserve. It is completely vulnerable to regulatory capture like every other part of the Federal Reserve. Look, the simple fact of the matter is, and I'm sorry, what is really popular among the American people is not Dodd-Frank or this regulation or that regulation. It's next time, let the fucking banks fail. You want to avoid too big to fail? Let a few of them fail. Yep. Let them actually crash. Let the capital get busted up and distributed among the rest of the population because the bank falls on its face for once.
That's what the American people want.
Elizabeth Warren isn't willing to do that.
DJ, do you think that would have been a solution in 2009?
Yes. It would have hurt. It would have been like a panic of 73, but we recovered from the panic of 1873. We recovered pretty quickly from it.
We recovered from the Civil War, too, but I wouldn't want another one.
What the hell does the Civil War have to do with a banking issue?
Well, you're talking about one of the great economic crashes of all time. When you say we recovered from it.
Yeah, we did. The panic of 1870, we recovered from the panic.
Why don't you talk about stuff that people know about? Nobody knows about the panic of 1873. Why don't we talk about 1933? Why don't we talk about 1933?
I do not give a flying F how people feel until I understand what they know. And if I don't think they know enough to be part of the conversation, as far as I'm concerned, they shouldn't be part of the conversation. Because here's the deal. The panic of 2008 was mass hysteria in Washington, D.C. It was created by the mark-to-market regulation, which could have been easily reversed. It was created by a bunch of Goldman Sachs alumni who didn't want the American people and small investors to know that certain banks had gotten sucked into these assets and certain banks hadn't. Because that's why they changed it from actually buying these troubled assets to bank recapitalization. Because they wanted us to believe that every bank was sick instead of some banks were simply dead banks walking. Because one of those dead banks walking was Goldman Sachs, which has nearly every Treasury secretary known to man going back over 50 years. I'm exaggerating. My point is it was a politically favored move from start to finish. Where it was a government-created problem, so they came up with a government-created solution. And as what happens when government-created solutions occur, they made things infinitely worse. And then 30 years from now, no one will actually remember how government made things worse, and it'll all be blamed on the free market. It's the same effing story over and over and over and over again. And I'm tired of it. If they were not willing to acknowledge, yes, this is our mistake with the mark-to-market regulations, then let the banks that got sucked on these bad assets fail and let the ones that didn't clean up the wreckage and pick off the carcasses.
So you were saying that the free market conservatives now with Trump are, you know, disenchanted and leaving and splitting. But it's all this stuff. It's these bailouts that both parties favored that really there has been no home for free market conservatives for a very long time. It's big government. And bigger government.
Some of that might be the reality of our system, right? The way our system is set up and the way our legal system is set up too, right? When you have class action suits and lack of tort reform and things like that, there for some of these issues, there really just isn't much of a way around it.
Warren 2020.
You're essentially re-electing.
Warren does not play in Ohio. I mean...
No,
Hillary.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll see.
We're talking about a candidate who ran 7 points behind Barack Obama in Massachusetts in 2012. Yeah. She is a weak candidate, and Republicans know she's a weak candidate. Why do you think they set it up so that she got all the spotlight to herself during the sessions confirmation battle? That was a plan. And they implemented it perfectly, and
First of all, I'm joking a little bit with Warren, although I do actually like her, but I'm joking.
You like her.
But,
I know.
But that said, okay, so let's throw it out there. If it's not going to be Warren and it's not going to be Sanders, who are the two best known names in the party right now?
Cory Booker.
Okay. So who do you guys think it is? It's not going to be Jim Webb. Okay.
It's going to
be Jim Webb.
It's not
going to
be Joe
Biden.
It's going to be Booker Kennedy. Booker Kennedy.
Wait, wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. What Kennedy? Who's the
Caroline
Kennedy?
Coming back
Caroline.
From Japan? From
yeah.
Japan?
She's back from Japan.
She's already she's back already, from Japan.
Mm-hmm. She's back. She's
it's
running
not
going to
be Caroline
now.
Kennedy. Come on.
Oh, it's going to be Camelot, baby.
Why not Kennedy Booker?
Because she doesn't have any legislative experience.
Why does everybody think Cory Booker is the sweet spot of the Democratic Party? I don't get it.
Cory Booker is not – Cory Booker is far from perfect, mind you. He has his own issues. No, but to be fair, among the Democratic names that are thrown about, he would probably be the one that with whom I would be most comfortable. He is not hostile to educational reform. That'll be a problem for him, the Democratic Party, frankly.
Yeah, but
he's not hostile to education reform.
Let's stop you there.
Charter schools
in New Jersey are different with much more regulation and oversight than in any other state. So you're right.
Are you really going to tell me that most people are going to go, oh, well, it's okay because it's New Jersey? No. New Jersey charter schools are different because they
have oversight and regulation versus Ohio charter schools, which has no oversight. It's literally referred to as the wild, wild west of education.
And none of that is going to matter a whit to the folks who will use Booker support for charter schools and education reform against them in the primary. They won't say, oh, it's okay because New Jersey has more regulation. They will say he hates public schools. He wants to bomb public schools. I have seen what they did to Ava Moskowitz in New York City. They'll do it to Cory Booker. But Cory Booker is also, as mayor,
is a bigger problem in the primaries, though.
Well, he has been very friendly to pharmaceuticals. Frankly, they employ a lot of people in New Jersey. They're all headquartered
there. I know.
That'll hurt. Well, like faith. I said, he's not perfect. But also, as mayor of Newark, he actually did a very good job governing that city. I grew up 5 miles from Newark. There was a time where we all thought Newark was ungovernable.
It's an armpit, too.
And Cory Booker was part of the generation of politicians that really helped turn Newark around. And I think, you know, from my experience, and granted, it's because I've seen him more up close, he is a Democrat who I think has a much better chance of reaching out across the aisle and winning over independent right leaning independents and moderate Republicans than any other Democrat who I see running. Now it's early though. There are people who may be under my radar that I don't see.
To what extent does it matter that he's not married?
Wasn't Woodrow Wilson not married?
In the Donald Trump era, I don't think it really matters. No, I'm serious.
You think we're over that?
Yeah. But DJ, let me ask you this, because I'm fascinated by this whole Cory Booker thing. Frankly, I don't understand why you think that he's more centrist than these other people. But that's not my question. I have a hypothetical for you. First of all, can we establish that of the people that we know now or, you know, have a shot at the 2020 nomination, is he the strongest candidate in your opinion, DJ? Just yes or no?
Are you talking for the nomination or the general election?
For the general election, who do you think is the strongest candidate? And again, not someone who can't get the nomination like a Jim Webb. I'm talking about you know, the usual suspects.
No, that's fine.
I don't know. I think we should talk more about Jim Webb.
I would say, and I don't give this as much value as most people because.
No, just give me a name because I'm actually going someplace with this.
I do think based on the names that I've seen that Cory Booker is the most electable. But my opinion on electability or anyone's opinion on electability 3 years out should not be given all that validity. It's based on issues that I like Cory Booker.
So you could live with him on issues?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So here's my question.
I could live with him a lot easier than most Democrats of whom I know who are running for president.
So here's my question for you. Again, totally hypothetical. We get to late 2019, early 2020. Cory Booker looks like a very strong candidate in the Democratic Party, okay, for the nomination. But you also find out that someone that you like in the Republican Party, whether that's a John Kasich, Greg, forgive me, whether that's Marco Rubio, whether that's Ted Cruz, You name it. I'll give you your choice. You find out that that person is going to mount a real run at Trump, and there seems to be a coalescing of a lot of Republicans around that person. Give me a name. Just, again, quickly, just someone who was in the hunt this year who you think could be this person that I'm talking about.
The only one who could possibly do that would be Cruz.
Lindsey Graham.
No, not enough people in the party for Graham.
Okay, so I go back. If you had to choose, if you had to stake out your position for 2020, and it's going to be, can Cory Booker get the Democratic nomination, or can Cruz wrest away the Republican nomination from Trump, where are you going to saddle your horse?
I know how I would have answered this if we asked this a year ago.
No, but I'm asking today.
I know we're asking today. I would probably have to swallow very, very hard and say I'm sticking with Cory Booker.
Oh, you surprised me. Okay.
Yeah, because saying I'll back Ted Cruz, there's the risk that he couldn't beat Donald Trump the first time. Why would he do it the second time? The other is Donald Trump has already, in my mind, polluted the Republican Party in a way that I'm just not comfortable with it anymore. I sincerely don't think it will be any better. In fact, I think it'll be much worse in 2020. For folks like me, even now, there's a much better shot making the Democratic Party more sane on economics than making the Republican Party less crazy on everything. So I'd have to say I would have to say I would probably stay on the Democratic side and go all in with Cory Booker.
Okay, well, I have to say then you've one, surprised me, and two, impressed me, because I thought you were a more fair weather Democrat than that. And no, I'm being genuine. I'm very impressed and surprised.
You get to keep
answer.
The T-shirt. You get to keep the Democratic T-shirt. And
thanks.
You can keep coming to our breakfasts. You know, I think it's blueberry muffins this week. No, so my brother said, I listened to the podcast. You were on it last week. And I know we're still recording. He goes,
when you get in a hole, stop digging.
Yeah, I don't care at this point. He goes, you know, you were on it. Kevin was wrong. I just want you to know how wrong Kevin was last week.
Well, that's a given.
I said about that Hitler thing. And he goes, yeah, he was just very wrong. I said, you know, Kevin had his own opinion, and I kind of like the fact that they had a debate about something that, to be quite honest, I hadn't really thought about. It was kind of interesting, and that's kind of what our podcast is about. And he goes, oh, okay, he was wrong. Okay,
good.
Let's just put it there.
I like your brother. He stood his ground. I like that. Okay, everybody, I'm going to let you go because I know it's midnight now.
Oh, I'm a pumpkin already. Good night, y'all.
Good night. Good night. Oh.